WFOD starts now.
Welcome. WFOD is live. I am Mike. I'm joined by my co-host, the ever-impactful Mr. Travis Hulse.
Hello and happy National Multiple Personality Day.
No, Travis. No.
Would you prefer National Cheese Doodle Day?
No, Travis. They don't all get their own day. They don't. Guys, Drunk should be here eventually, and after the break, we will be joined by comedian Andrew Heaton. But first, we have so much to discuss. If you'd like to join in the conversation, 636-487-HAND or WFOD show on Skype. Travis, did you hear about Barbara Streisand's dogs?
Do you mean about her dog that's exactly like her other dog?
It's crazy how that happened, right?
Right.
Travis,
do you have to be an insanely rich person to indulge in some of these weird idiosyncratic things that exist but maybe shouldn't?
It's really kind of fun. Barbara Streisand had a dog. Grew to be 14 years of age. His name was Samantha. And she loved that goddamn dog, Travis. Loved it.
As people do, typically, especially if they live that long.
It was like a white foo-foo dog. It looks like, you know, the white dogs that you see all the time. And Samantha, you know, got old and died, as dogs do. Travis, as you know oh so well.
Of course.
Dogs get old and they die.
Sometimes they don't get old.
But somebody gave Barbara Streisand hope, Travis. I gave her hope. Travis, did you see James Gunn, the director of the Guardians of the Galaxy films, say on the Twitter the other day that Baby Groot is not Groot?
No, Baby Groot is son of Groot.
Yeah, Groot is dead. Groot died, but Baby Groot is like a clone. See, when I think of clones, Travis, I think of like that movie, was that Eraser, when they made another Arnold Schwarzenegger?
And like, was it Eraser? Or no, The Sixth Day is the Arnold Schwarzenegger clone movie.
Are you sure Eraser wasn't an Arnold Schwarzenegger clone?
Yeah, Eraser is the movie where Arnold Schwarzenegger shoots those guns through walls and shit. The Sixth Day is the one where he had the clone.
And the clone was trying to kill him to be the Arnold Schwarzenegger. And see, that's what I think of when I think of clones. I think, like, you make a clone of me, and it's like, you know, a multiplicity. And there's a whole bunch of me's that are like my age walking around that have all my thoughts.
Yeah, typically. When the technology was actually brought to the public and said, hey, we can do this now, I think they did just do like an embryonic thing where it's like, hey, this sheep is a clone of this other sheep, but DNA wise is an exact replica, but you're not going to really be able to tell if it's going to be the exact same thing for another, you know, 5-6 years.
So I hear that that Baby Groot is not Groot. Groot died. See, but I thought, you know, when I saw Baby Groot at the end of the film, I thought, oh, happy ending. There's Groot. He's fine. He's just got to grow up again. But that's not Groot. Groot's fucking dead, Travis.
Yeah, he's super dead. The happy ending still did exist in Guardians 1. It's just the fact that Groot's stick grew into a another plant. It was his son. It was the progeny of original Groot.
So Samantha dies, Travis. Samantha, the dog, the white foo-foo dog. Looks like a million other white foo-foo dogs.
Those dogs take an extreme amount of care, and if you don't, like, constantly groom them, they get all that goopy
it's,
shit.
It's like having a white car, right? You gotta wash it all the time, because it looks dirty like, so quickly.
Eyes out in their ears, otherwise they're just, like, grime. They all look homeless. Unless you have somebody 24-7, like, grooming these dogs, they just look like homeless dogs.
So, before Samantha dies, they say, hey, Barbara, maybe there's hope. We're gonna take some cells from the inside of her cheek and from the inside of her belly. And maybe we're going to be able to make more Samanthas, make more of these white foo-foo dogs.
Did they do this prior to the dog? Like the dog was on its deathbed.
The dog was on its deathbed. Yeah. And they took some cells from the
Barbara.
Dog.
Hey, I know you didn't call us. We are just constantly looking for celebrities with pets about to die.
They saw a Rube, Travis. They saw a rich Rube.
It's like the beginning of so many weird sci-fi horror movies where it's like right. they come out of nowhere and they're like, hey, we have an offer for you. You've never heard of this happening, but
dog's going to be fucking evil, right? It's going to be an evil fucking dog. She's distraught. She's totally bummed out. She's had this dog for 14 years, Travis. She takes it everywhere. She's one of those people that takes her dog everywhere.
Of course.
It is one of those white foo-foo dogs. And somebody that she knows calls and says, hey, I have this rescue dog. What was the fuck? Sadie. They said the dog named Sadie. It kind of looks like your dog. It's not an exact match, but you know, you're sad. Your dog died. We got this rescue dog, needs a home. So they gave Sadie to Barbara Streisand. And soon after she brought Sadie into the house, the cloners called. And they said, hey, Barbara, you're never going to fucking believe this. But you know those cells we got from your dog? We made 4 dogs out of it. Now, I went to this place's website, this cloning place, and apparently it's $50,000 for a dog and $25,000 for a cat.
Oh, my God.
I don't know why it's half off for a cat.
Well, because cat, you throw away a cat. You get cats anywhere. It's like a dog have personality. Cats, the personality of a cat is, fuck you, I'm going to shit in this box, clean it up. And sometimes I'll jump on your lap and let you pet me. But a dog has personality.
But I mean, that's a $25,000 stretch?
I would assume so. I mean, yeah, I go to any humane society. You're going to pay double for a dog.
I mean, Travis, I go to a store and I get a chicken sandwich or I get a turkey sandwich. They're going to be about the same. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yep. But they're poultry, you know?
Is a goddamn chicken sandwich. You know what I'm saying? I don't see. I mean, I would understand if they said $30,000 for a dog, $25,000 for a cat. Anyway. So they said, we got 4 fucking dogs, right? We got 4 of these dogs. One, and so they called back a couple hours later and say,
did she check the box that said, hey, when you decide to finally use these cells to clone my dead pet, is there like a number that populates? Do you like write down the number of dogs max that you want made out of these things? Or did they just say, oh, the magic number? I don't know. We got some extra DNA laying around.
Yeah,
Let's make a few more.
I don't know if it's $50,000 per dog they get. Or if it's like $50,000 to go through the process.
Probably per dog, I would assume so, because the process, you know, it's per animal. You know, the thing is, they probably make these extra animals. They said, you sign up for one, right? You pay this upfront fee. Hey, we're going to take your cells. We're going to see what we can do with them. And then you're paying for the one dog. Well, then they make 3 more dogs, and they say, ah, shit, you know, we had this extra dough laying around, so we made 3 more pies, but they're your pies specifically, and if you don't want them, you know, this exact same replica dog, we're just going to go ahead and sell them to somebody else, and we're going to say it was cloned from Barbara Streisand's dog.
Right. Do you want Barbara Streisand's cloned dog?
In any, like, non-connected to reality rich person, like Barbara Streisand probably hasn't been for 60 years, she's probably like, well, fuck no, this shithead down in Malibu is not going to get one of my cloned dogs. I want all of them.
See, now,
and then she pays like an extra fee to like get all those dogs.
The thing for me, Travis, is what assurances do I have that they didn't just get a picture of my dog and go find a dog that looked like my dog?
Right. Well, right.
Like
you, well, a lot of faith. In
this some charlatans went and bought a goddamn lab coat, and all of a sudden they're cloning guys. You know, I don't trust this. So you know what I would do is I would trick them, and I would give them the DNA of a different dog first, and I would say, hey, what kind of dog can you make out of this DNA that I got from my dog? And if they bring me a white dog and like I got it from like a golden retriever, then I know that they're full of shit.
They sue the shit out of them, shut their company right down. But I don't think they probably don't allow you to bring your own DNA in. It's probably not like, you know, like a piss test kind of urination, like fecal kind of test that you just bring. Hey, drop this by the doctor's office. I'd imagine they have to harvest it because they know exactly what they need to maybe, you know, duplicate your pet.
But that's just the thing also, Travis. It is not your dog. It's like a baby of your dog. It's Baby Groot.
It is definitely Baby Groot. And that's the thing. Like, it can have all the same DNA, but it's not necessarily going to have all the same life experiences. When that dog's delivered to your house, it's not immediately going to go to you because you call it by the old name. It doesn't have the memory. This isn't like a Miles Warren, Jackal, Spider-Man, Scarlet Spider situation where Miles Warren cloned Peter Parker and the clone thought it was the original Peter Parker and he threw it into the mix to like fuck with original Peter Parker. The thing doesn't have the old dog's memories. Like, it's not going to take on the mantle of your old dog. It just looks like your fucking dog.
So they call her and they say, hey, we got four more dogs. One of the dogs ends up dying, but they still have these three dogs, right? So they have three dogs made from the DNA of her dog. Now, what I would do, first thing I would look into is, can I John Spartan freeze those other two dogs? You know, can I just cryogenically freeze them until I need them? You know, another 14 years, I'm going to be sad again. I have spare dogs. Take it out of the Demolition Man storage in another 25 years or so. You know, 14 years or so.
Well, to be fair, Babs probably doesn't have another 14 plus years. So at least if you're going to do that, you'd have to stagger it. Like, okay, I'm gonna be with this dog for a couple of years. Okay, thaw that other one. Then I'm going to be with these two dogs for a couple of years.
Oh, so
okay,
that,
thaw that last one.
Yeah, so that there's like an overlap.
Right, there's like an overlap.
And so then
like
you still have dies, that still youthful, have exuberant energy around you. And if one dies, oh, well, you have other ones.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like, if you thaw them all out at the same time, you get all three goddamn dogs, they're probably all going to die at the same time. And that's just going to be devastating when your $100,000 investment starts getting sick at the same time. It's going to be too much for her, old Babs.
I mean, 100 grand is probably a drop in the bucket, but the emotional tax is probably pretty high.
Right, right. That's what I'm saying. You know, one dog died, and what did she do? She just went and started throwing money all over time to try to feel what she felt again.
Right. Do you think it worked? Do you think she did feel it, or was it like, did she get like that surge? You remember that viral video that went around of those people who let that tiger, they were magicians and shit, and they let that tiger back into the wild, and then like, I don't know, it was like 5-10 years later, they went back out there, and the tiger like ran to them and gave them a big old hug, remembered who they were. Do you think she got that initial jolt of like happiness, and then was like, oh, I got to three fucking dogs around here now. What am I gonna do with all these dogs?
Travis, I forgot to tell you about what happened to old Sadie the rescue dog.
Oh, she probably turned her back into the Humane Society. Dropped her back off of the pound.
The Sadie the rescue dog that she got soon after her dog died. She gave that dog away. She gave
unrescued that dog because she got her dogs that she really wanted back.
Yeah, she has like a manager's assistant. She said, hey, you know, your whole job is to clean up my shit. So here's this fucking rescue dog I don't want anymore.
I didn't want it in the first place. Yeah. It's like a placeholder.
Yeah, I got a couple of $50,000 dogs. I don't need this $75 donation to the Humane Society dog anymore. You know, I got some more important shit to deal with.
Yeah, throw it on the streets, do whatever you have to do. I just don't want it in my sight.
And she also did not keep all three clone dogs. She kept two of the clone dogs and gave the third clone dog to her A&R man so that she could still keep an eye on the clone dog, you know, and see how it progresses in life.
Can you just take a step back for a second? Can you imagine how awful your life's going to be for the entire time you know Barbara Streisand because she gave you one of her clone dogs, she's constantly going to be judging your actions and wondering what kind of food you're feeding this dog.
What kind of dog food you're giving her shitty clone dog.
Yeah, you're gonna bring the dog for a play date and it's gonna be just a little dirty and she's gonna be like, well, I gave you this clone. You know how much this clone dog cost me? That's gotta be a miserable existence dealing with Barbara Streisand's unwanted clone dog.
That's Samantha's kid. And if you were the third clone dog that didn't get to live with Barbara Streisand, you got to live with some fucking A&R guy, how pissed off would you be?
Well, and two, I mean, by the time you get to the third clone, that's the Pizza Steve clone, right?
Yeah.
I like pizza, you know?
Yeah, she probably looked them all over and figured out which one, you know, looked the dumbest. And that's the one she gave to the A&R man.
Yeah, you got your hardworking clone dog. You got your anal retentive clone dog who likes to wrap things up tight. And then you got the one that puts pieces of pizza in a wallet.
Are you sure that it wasn't a eraser? Eraser's the one that he fought the alligator and said, your luggage.
No, that's collateral damage.
He didn't say your luggage and eraser?
I think collateral damage was the your luggage one, because that's the one with the extremely like stereotypical terrorist, right? Like collateral damage. That's the one with like the jihad and shit.
And
I think Eraser is just I think Vanessa L. Williams was in Eraser. And then the sixth day was the one where he showed up at his house after a hard day of work and saw that he was already in the house talking and having dinner with his family.
Anchor in the chat saying that the transporter in Star Trek is just a cloning machine. That's not true, is it?
Well, I think it dismantles your atoms and then reconstructs them in a different spot.
But you're still the same you, right?
Yeah, you still have your consciousness. It takes your consciousness with it. It's like the fly, the Goldblum takes you from one spot to another.
So I get beamed up. I'm still the same me. Like there's not a me that we're leaving down on the evil planet that's going to get eaten by snake monsters.
Right, it's the exact atoms that make up your physical structure and your mind, and it just deconstructs and then reconstructs somewhere else. What you don't want is you don't want to have any foreign matter in your beam, otherwise it could reconstruct you with other atoms, and that would be no good.
Huh. What's going on with you, man? Do you got things that happened to you this week that you think people would be entertained to hear about?
Oh, I think it's been a fairly uneventful week, right? I'm like still trying to stay on the straight and narrow when it comes to my diet. Like we're in like week four of a 6 week like weight loss healthy challenge thing at work.
Like competing?
Well, yeah, we do it every year, and I started it years and years ago, but now I'm kind of over it. But as a manager, I was kind of roped into being a part of it again. And I knew from looking in the mirror that I probably should take part. Like this last holiday season was not good to me, and I indulged and had zero willpower when it came to all of the food that was constantly around me. So I'm like the fattest guy I've ever been in my entire life by probably a good 15, 20 pounds. So I figured I probably should take part in it. I'm doing okay. I'm doing pretty good. But I was a little disheartened to learn after like 3 weeks I dropped like 6 pounds. And I mean, I haven't been doing any exercising or anything, but
just been eating less.
Yeah, I've just been trying to curb eating a bunch of shit and like staying up, you know, and I'm up at like 10 o'clock and I'm like, hey, I'm gonna watch this episode of Gotham. And what goes better with Gotham than four mini candy bars and maybe a bag of popcorn and a few pieces of cheese? And then, oh, shit, there's queso dip in the fridge. I might as well dip a couple tortillas in there.
I've never competed in a weight loss challenge before. It's never struck me as something to do.
I've literally won every single one in the past. Like every single year that I've taken part in this at work, I have always been on the winning team and typically am the guy that loses the most weight. But I mean, I gain it back immediately after, but I always lose it pretty well.
Honestly, I don't think I've ever tried to lose weight before either. I don't think that's ever happened either. I should. I think that when my wife has...
My wife!
When my wife has wanted to diet, I've, like, gone along with it.
Sure. But did you take it seriously, though?
No, not really.
Yeah. I see, it usually hits me, and I typically... get to the point, and it's usually during this weight loss challenge thing, is where I start to feel uncomfortable, and not even uncomfortable, just like when everything that I do physically seems to take a toll on me, and I'm like breathing heavy, and like my gut is pushing into my chest. You know what I mean? Like when everything is just in the wrong spot, that's when I figure it's probably time to do something about it. I wish I was a more active guy in general, but I, you know, we've been watching, me and the kids have been watching Ultimate Beastmaster on Netflix.
What is Ultimate Beastmaster? You said something about that, but I don't know what it is. What is it?
It's an obstacle course thing. So it's like American Ninja Warrior or any of that kind of stuff too. It's just like,
so the beast is the obstacle course.
Yeah, the beast is the obstacle course. It's like in the shape of a dragon, and every one of the obstacles is like, they call one like the spinal challenge, and one's like, you know, it's all about insides of the beast. So, yeah, it's like it starts out with each round has 12 contestants, and it whittles down. There's like four levels, the fourth being the last, and it whittles down to like one person who goes into the final round. They end up with eight, and they all compete in the final round. We've only gotten through like half of the first season so far, but my kids are super into it, which I'm cool with, because I remember watching like American Gladiator and shit when I was a kid and just loving it. But you know, you watch these people who is like from like South Korea and like America. They got two from like every country. So you got some South Koreans, some Brazilians, you got some Germans, you got some people from Japan, you got a couple of Americans, a couple of Mexicans, and
all looking to pickle the beast.
Well, and yeah, they try to take down this beast, and all of these people are like parkour teachers and like ice climbers and like CrossFit trainers and shit. And you watch these people who are just shredded. They look great. They're like able to do that weird thing where you can go like at a 90 degree angle off a pole with just your upper body strength. And you look at these people, and then I feel my gut pressing into my man boobs, and I'm like, man, I should really fucking get up off this couch and do something.
Yeah, you should commit yourself to tackling the beast.
Yeah, take that beast. I look at this beast too, right? And I'm like, you think in your head, it's like, I could probably do that, right? Or like at least I wouldn't die doing this thing.
Well, yeah, because you'd fall off really quick.
Like immediately you're in the water.
Yeah, and then you just fall in some water. You'd be fine.
Yeah, but I feel like, you know, I've jumped from like playground lily pad to playground lily pad before. You know, those are three feet apart probably, and you know these things that they're jumping across are only like 8 feet apart. That can't be that big of a gap.
Yeah, I think my mind is still in a place where I'm skating 6 days a week and in really good shape. Nice. But yesterday I got winded after about 20 minutes of raking leaves. I was out raking leaves and my arms were just getting so tired. And I was like, I'm not a guy who can rake leaves anymore. I can't spend any time out here doing any sort of housework because I get tired and I just want to sit down.
That's typically where I'm at too. Like I have a chainsaw. I don't use it often. I typically, if like a tree goes down, I try to cut that bastard up so I can throw it in my fire pit. But I'll tell you what, like as I'm doing it, as I'm like cutting up a log to like just throw over by the fire pit, I'm fine with it. Like I feel okay. But any time in the last, you know, half decade that I've done this, that I've spent 2-3 hours using a chainsaw, the next morning, which is typically a Sunday morning when I wake up in my bed, I immediately, as soon as my eyes open and my consciousness kind of springs forth, like I know immediately I can't move. Like if I move, I'm going to be in the worst pain that there ever was. And it takes me like 3 days to recover from, you know, an afternoon of cutting lumber.
Travis, in the chat, Michelle is asking who rakes leaves in the winter. And to answer her question, the kind of guy who rakes leaves in the winter is the kind of guy who didn't rake leaves in the fall. So it's still the same leaves. It's not like there's new leaves and I'm like, damn it, I just raked those leaves. No, I've taken a really long time to rake the leaves.
I do have a couple of miserable oaks that every fall they refuse to drop all of their leaves. And then as soon as like the winter hits, there's like leaves all over the top of snowbanks and shit. I do have a couple of those. So that could be.
Travis, we're moving to Tuesdays, I believe.
Tuesdays. No more Dicks Mondays?
We've been doing the show on Monday nights since February of 2012.
It is. Oh, see, that's not as far back as I thought. I thought you went longer back than that, further back than that.
Well, our show has been on longer than that, but we've been live on Mondays since 2012. And it's a necessary change to keep everybody going. So we're going to swap with Not Safe for Water Coolers starting in April. So you can hear them on Monday nights. You can hear us on Tuesdays. So,
and I got to say, personally, I'm fairly psyched for this move because there's a local tavern that literally takes a minute and a half to get to from my home that does, it's 25-cent wing night on Mondays.
Yeah.
I can feed the family and drink a couple pitchers of beer for very cheap. On Monday nights, but I'm very rarely able to take part because we do the show.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be able to, talking about the weight loss challenge. As soon as that shit's over, I'm going to be knee deep in deep fried chicken wings. It's going to be great.
So guys, if you listen to the show live, you tune in a day later. If you listen to the podcast might start showing up a day later. I don't really know yet. Probably. But fair warning, in April, things are going to be a little different. Not much, just a little. It's a day later. But, you know, it'll be extra good then because we have an extra day to prepare, right?
Well, I mean, you're just kind of just shifting the preparation.
Right. Guys, going to take a break. We will be back in just a few minutes with Reason TV's mostly weekly host Andrew Heaton. Guys, we're sponsored again this week by the good folks at Cam Soda, the most advanced social cam network on the internet. Today's digital strip club with 24/7 access from your computer, tablet, or mobile device. There's no subscription or rebilling, totally free to try. You go to camsoda.com/podcast. That's CAMSODA.com/podcast. Head on over there. You watch some cammy shows. You watch some gals doing some things. camsoda.com/podcast. Yeah, tell them the dicks.
So let me get this straight. You want me to take this off?
Yes, please.
Strangely, we like all the same pop culture bullshit that you like.
References are an incredibly valuable way to find work you can only get by having work experience in the first place. Back in the days before unpaid internships, I used to give my own number as a reference and pretended to be my own former employer.
Oh, Heaton's a great guy. Eye for detail, all that stuff. Knows Microsoft Suite and Haggis. All right, it's the bagpipes. Gotta go, Braveheart, to you.
Well, my word, Andy Heaton's a tall drink of water that never had no drug charges.
WFOP!
I was once with Verizon, not anymore.
Used to ask if you could hear me now, but I switched to Sprint.
Hey, you're the...
I used to ask if you could hear me now, but I switched to Sprint.
I switched too.
Great. All the networks are great. We're talking within a 1% difference in reliability. And Sprint's listed 50% of most current national air coverage.
Sprint's reliability is now within 1%
more air coverage. All the networks are great. We're talking within a 1% difference in reliability.
Can you hear that?
No.
60% of most current national air coverage.
Oh God. What phone carrier do we have?
AT&T, I think? Why?
Paul isn't coming to it, is he?
Paul who?
The can you hear me now guy. He switched to Sprint. Can he switch again? We switch.
No, I don't think so. Why?
I don't trust him, that Paul. I don't support what he did.
Go back to bed, Mike.
Can you hear me now?
Good.
Once again, WFOD, wheelbarrow full of dicks.
Guys, welcome back. Phone number to contact the show is 636-487-HAND or WFOD show on Skype. Our guest tonight is a stand-up comedian, author, and host of Reason TV's Mostly Weekly. Andrew Heaton is here, everybody. Andrew.
Hello.
How are you doing, buddy?
I am living the dream. How are you doing?
Oh, man, I'm great. I'm Mike. Travis is on with us, too. Hi, Travis. You're there.
Hello.
Andrew, I like your videos on Reason TV, the Mostly Weekly programs.
Why, thank you.
But what happens is I kind of had this realization about myself, because every week when you put one of these videos out, I share it on my Facebook page, and I'm starting to think that are you familiar with The Simpsons?
Yes, I have seen them once or twice, yes.
You know the guys that stand behind Ralph and just say, yeah, when Ralph says something? Like, I think he has like a purple stocking cap.
Are you talking about Ralph Wiggins?
No, so it's not, no, not Ralph. What? Nelson.
Nelson, yeah. and his two pals.
Yeah. The thug guys, yeah.
I'm one of the guys standing behind you saying, yeah, I think.
Does that make me Nelson?
You're Nelson.
I feel like I'm the doctor.
Yeah.
The device is about ready to go now.
And I guess I'm not calling you like a bully, but I'm saying that, you know, like I kind of feel like I'm somehow using your videos to try to tell people that I'm smart.
Well, that's great.
Does that make sense? You know, like people that share John Oliver's videos, I think they're just kind of saying, I agree with all this stuff John Oliver just said. Well, so,
and, you know, and on top of that, I don't think there's a lot of kind of vigorously pro-market perspectives operating in political satire. So if you are, and I like John Oliver for the record, I think he's very talented. And I agree with him, I'd say most of the time, but I do disagree with him on economics a lot of the time. So with him and with The Daily Show and with a lot of these other things, it's kind of, you know, they're varying levels of funny and research, but they're all pretty much from the same political perspective, which is that of a progressive liberal. And I'm coming from an independent perspective that leans libertarian. I think that's of great benefit right now, when there aren't a lot of ideas that are getting catered to in that capacity.
In the spoonful of sugar humor category, I guess you would say.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think for one thing, I think there's plenty of people arguing about stuff on social media. There's no paucity of individuals that get on there and say, you know, I never do political stuff, but I must say in this instance, and then they, you know, go off and fight about whatever it is, the 50th time that they've done it. That's everybody's doing that. I think that those are cathartic but useless. I think very few people are effectively swayed to any particular position by fighting on social media. But what I do think can happen with comedy, which is fantastic, is that if someone's willing to laugh at your joke, there is a moment where you're both on the same page. That does not happen when you're arguing. When you're arguing, you know, both of your guards come up, even if it's in a good capacity, even if it's in a civil capacity. When you're laughing, when you're joking, you're receptive to contrary ideas for a little bit. And that's one of the things that I hope to accomplish with the humor that I do. Not really to convert people. I don't really see that as my goal, but just to get people to try out different ideas. With a lot of the Mostly Weekly videos we've done, some of the best feedback I get is from people that I wouldn't normally agree with who say something like, you know, I don't agree with you, but I hadn't thought of it like that. And I'm like, great. Like, you know, say with the minimum wage, I'm very pleased if the next time you go to a town hall meeting or you're going to go do whatever, if you go, you know, that there are some potential downsides to this that we should talk about. Like, terrific. I want people to be aware of all the perspectives rather than just going, you know, yay, my team, the other team's evil. I don't think that kind of rhetoric is really beneficial to solutions for anybody.
And seems to be what is the most popular now, right? It's your echo chambers. It's like if you want the most retweets, if you want the most shares, it is to cater to that audience who already believes what they believe. You're just spoon feeding them exactly what they want to hear.
That, like, I wish I could debase. I don't want to say debase myself. If I had more of a partisan or more of a tribalistic mindset than I do, and I really don't have much of one, then I would be a lot more successful than I am, because that does play better. If you can tap that tribal vibe, which is what most people are doing. By the way, I don't know in what capacity we're playing. If I swear, am I okay?
You're fine.
Oh, yeah, you're fine.
Keep this PG. Great.
Let her fly.
So having done political satire now in one capacity or another for about 5 years, most people, when they are having political discussions, are really having one discussion over and over again. And that is, my team is the good team. The other team is a bunch of fuckwits and I hate them.
Right. They're evil. They're Nazis.
They're evil fuckwits. And on my end, I don't think that. Like, my I used to be a Democrat. Before that, I was a Republican, and I still maintain lots of friends from both parties. And I would like to think that I really try hard to seduce people from across the political spectrum on a regular basis. And so I'm willing to bridge the divide. But I find that most people are really just wanting to have that conversation. And you can see that when you talk to people. If you bring up some point, I don't know, let's say, like, you know, Donald Trump wants to repeal the Jones Act, which is this sort of 19th century protectionist legislation that's hurting Puerto Rico. And I agree, we should repeal the Jones Act. They'll go, right, but the Republicans are, like, you know, they've been bought off. And it's like, okay, like, I guess the conversation you want to have is Democrats are good and Republicans are evil, or vice versa. I'm not interested in having that just dumbass Manichaean debate with you. That's not for me to do. You can go find some people at a bar and yell at each other. I'm going to actually try and work with ideas, and I'm going to try and reach out to other people that enjoy thinking.
Well, and I mean, are the Democrats turning down campaign contributions? I know it's easy to say that the Republicans are bought off.
I don't even really want to. I don't want to poke holes at the Democrats. I don't think that the divide is left right. I think the divide right now in America is between people who read books and people who write in all caps on Twitter. And I have met many a good person who's a Democrat, many a good person who's Republican, and many a good person who's a Libertarian. And I'm very happy to sit down and have a beer and chat with them about politics and anything else, so long as they're in the I hadn't thought of that end of the debate, as opposed to the all caps, right, but we're the good people and, you know, you're the bad people. Those right. Folks, even when I agree with them, I don't really want to sit down and hang out with them too much.
Right. And it's just like the, you know, you get a Trump soundbite and then you get an Obama soundbite and people who are against what Trump said, and then they just post it and say, oh, but it was okay when Obama said it. You know, it is a completely us versus them mentality. And I've been dealing with that I'm a Chicago Bears fan living in central Wisconsin, middle of Packer country. So it is us versus them.
Yeah, you've got an uphill battle there.
Exactly. And I've been dealing with it that way, but it is, there is no middle ground. It doesn't seem anymore. I look at my Facebook page and friends, family, and barely acquaintances. And I see extreme, like you said, progressive liberals who everything Trump does is the worst thing that ever happened. Even if you kind of do a little bit of research, it's like, hey, there might actually be some benefits here if you look at it. Yeah. And then you have the full on Trump supporters who, no matter what he does and how crooked it is, they are behind him 100%. And yeah. I have very few people in any of my social media circles that kind of just fall in the middle and say, hey, well, this kind of sounds good. And yeah, this is kind of crooked. And it seems like it's a hole that we're in that it's going to be very difficult to get out of.
Yeah, I agree. It's not a fun place to be for those of us that are of moderate temperament, which is to say that we just sort of presume humanity on account of those we disagree with. It is not a good place to be right now, because the safe place to be is not in the middle. The safe place to be is deep, deep within the recesses of your respective party. Although I will say that I think the weird thing and that gives me a little bit of hope is I don't think that's actually I should say I think there's a lot of people that don't fall into that category. There was some Pew research that came out about 3 weeks ago that found that the country's getting very partisan and very divided, but only amongst media and political people. That actually the folks that are not in media and politics are much less divided than the rest of the country. And in some ways that's good. In some ways that's bad. It's bad, I think, in the sense that a lot of people don't really have any type of ideology they're working with. And that's why you can see weird things where someone will be a protectionist one minute and not a protectionist the next minute. But it's uplifting in another sense, which means that there might be a lot of people that aren't, you know, dyed-in-the-wool partisans that are maybe even going to go hang out with their neighbors that they disagree with and that kind of thing. And I am hopeful that that will eventually return. And I think it probably will. I think there's going to come a burnout point where we just can't sustain I don't know if you guys watched the Oscars last night, but I was looking at some of the Twitter feed during bathroom breaks, and it was like, you know, Oscar, 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 Trump. I was like, guys, I mean, like, I probably agree with you on whatever you're going to say about Trump. Like, I think you're probably right, but I'm just getting so bored.
It's boring. With this. Yeah,
this is exhausting.
The thing is it just seems like that's kind of. Does he want that?
Yes.
Does he wants this?
Well, he wants two things. He wants, like, on a I say this, I don't know what his id is all about, but it would seem to me that on an emotional level, he wants attention and he craves attention. But I would say on a strategic level, it is beneficial to him to be able to dictate the media cycle. I worked in cable television for about 3 years. I worked for a show called Kennedy and for a show called The Independents. And so I was kind of
was that the MTV DJ?
MTV's Kennedy?
MTV VJ Kennedy. She now has a show on Fox Business. She's wonderful, an absolutely lovely person, very smart person. But I was working on her show. As the election was happening, and what was interesting to watch that I could see that I don't know if everybody else was that during the primaries, whenever Donald Trump dropped in the polls, you know, 6 points or whatever, he would say the craziest shit. Like, he would drop in the polls by 3 points, and like clockwork, he'd go, "I will hang Rosie O'Donnell from a tree," and then everyone in America would pay attention to him, and he would feed off of that. And because he was so acerbic and so charismatic. I mean, he is charismatic. It would bump up his points, and he would also get all this free advertising.
He has an alarm that goes off at 3 o'clock in the morning. Says, "Oh, Kim Jong-un's fat."
Yep. and he. So, you know, if you were, you know, Marco Rubio or Gary Johnson or even Hillary Clinton, and you wanted to do a press conference about your foreign policy objectives or whatever, he could just suck the oxygen out of the room by saying something crazy, everybody paying attention to it, and then giving him that. And then the other thing he can do now is if there's a particular – he's pretty much able to frame the news of the day because he, you know, wakes up at 6 and starts tweeting. And that's going to be the news cycle for the day. And it takes a lot of a lot of effort, willpower on the part of media people to resist that if he says that he's going to, like, you know, shoot a panda on the back of the White House lawn to teach the Chinese he meets business or whatever crazy thing he's saying, that it takes a lot of, like, you know, for George Will to write a column that's like, but actually steel tariffs or whatever the thing, you know, the actual thing we should be paying attention to. But if you give into that and you're like, I'm going to forfeit sovereignty of my emotional state to Donald Trump's Twitter feed at any hour of the day, then you're also forfeiting your ability to focus on things, and you're forfeiting your capacity to navigate a conversation towards a productive way. So he's leading the nation by the nose on that.
And that is the problem, because nobody is going to let that go, because everybody wants clicks. Everybody wants you to buy that newspaper with that sensationalized headline, because journalism still needs, it's still a business. Like, people still need to, you know, be paid for their work. And I don't care who you are, you're going to click on that ridiculous headline that said Donald Trump just said he's going to shoot that panda. Because it's like, what the hell is our president of our United States doing?
It's so unpresidential when he shoots pandas, Travis.
I think that I'm potentially leading the charge of this, because I have gotten fairly exhausted on Trump news. I was in about this time last year. I went to Eastern Europe for about 3 weeks for completely legal, very non-suspicious reasons. If you were to ask how legal, I would say very legal, very legal. Anyway, I was over there, and I was at I didn't check the news at all while I was over there. And I would meet people at hostels, and they'd say, "Gosh, you're handsome," and I'd say, "Thank you." And then afterwards, they'd say, "Did you see the thing Trump did today?" And I'd go, "No, did he say something inflammatory?" And then there was some sort of like vague whiff of scandal, but there's nothing that's actually provable. And then go, "Yeah, how did you know?" And I'm like, "Because that's literally every day. I don't need to check in on a daily basis to see that that's going to be the case." Whereas I'm kind of intrigued more now by seeing what's happening on the state level, which is not as sexy, but you know, I think it's interesting what's happening with the state legislatures as they're responding to the mass shooting that happened in Florida. That a lot of them are doing gun reform that. Is the kind of stuff that has been kind of centrist gun reform for years, or conversely, there's, you know, pot getting legalized in lots of different states. So there's interesting things that are happening, and a lot of them are happening local and state instead of national. And I think eventually we will top out on Trump. There will come a point of mass exhaustion where
just be too much.
Otherwise people will just like emotionally burn out and be on so much Xanax that they won't have any other option.
Andrew, did you learn an instrument when you were a kid?
Gosh, I wish I had.
Yeah,
no,
me too. Right?
I did a little. I took piano lessons very briefly, but I went into comedy. And if I could go back in time, I would tell young Heaton that guitar would be such a better way to meet women than doing stand-up comedy. I wish I could go back and do that. Yeah. Why do you ask?
I was just curious.
No,
my life would have been totally different if I had.
I always fantasize about myself sitting at that bench in front of a piano and just like breaking one out, like a nice classical standard, but then also like going into something like, you know, poppy that everybody in the bar could like really get into.
Oh, you know, Travis, I mean? You see a piano somewhere and it looks, and you just go over there and sit down and start playing it, and everybody's impressed.
I think the piano would be great because you could. You could do rock and things like that, but like there's a bar that I really like here in New York called Maurice Crisis, where we all sing show tunes, and you could you know organize that at your house. You could have like, you know, 10 people come over and do sing-alongs and things, which I know sounds like ridiculously 1950s, but I think it'd be a lot of fun.
That sounds good to me. I'd be into that.
I think if I could pick anything though, I think I'd do the banjo. I really like bluegrass music.
Isn't it? It's really hard.
Yeah,
and you got to get those little claws on all your fingers.
If I could do anything, like I can. I lived in Brooklyn for a little bit, so I know how to play the ukulele because that's required. I can do ukulele. I am passable at ukulele. Banjo seems a lot more complicated to me. So if I could snap my fingers and play one thing, that's what I'd want to play. That or maybe the fiddle.
So mightyheaton.com. That's your website. Is that also your Twitter account?
At Mighty Heaton is my Twitter handle. Can I plug the website? Can
absolutely.
I put a pitch in? Yeah. So I do a bunch of political satire, and as we alluded to earlier, I've got a bunch of political satire videos that are funny. They're pro market. They're from a libertarian perspective. And even if you disagree with that, it's worth checking out because it's amusing and maybe you'll learn something from another perspective. You can see all of those on my website, mightyheaton.com. That's mightyheaton.com. And for folks that like that kind of thing, I have a newsletter. And if you go to the website, click on newsletter, you can sign up for that. And I'll let you know whenever a funny video comes out.
It's great.
One last question, Andrew, but who are going to build the roads?
Who's going to build the shoes? Who's going to make the watches?
Travis, I didn't ask Andrew the wallet question.
Okay.
Andrew, you're a stand-up comedian. Yeah. You go on stage pretty regularly.
Yeah.
When you go out there, what do you do with your wallet? Is your wallet in your pocket, or do you leave it backstage?
So I do one of two things. For a long time, I used to go out in a blazer, because that's my I just like wearing a blazer. I like the look, and it's like you're wearing a bunch of pockets, which is the benefit to it. Like, we don't get to wear purses as men. See, we wear blazers.
It's like torso cargo pants.
Yeah, it's exactly. Or wearing a vest or something.
Just sold me on a blazer, man.
Yeah.
No, torso cargo pants? That sounds great.
That's what we should. You know what? Actually, I think.
But it's also classy.
Yeah.
You could market this to a whole new segment of the population that would never buy a blazer if you call them torso cargo pants. There's got to be a demographic of, like, burnt out hippies living in a van, and also some like very utilitarian surfers that would wear it. So I used to do that. I don't wear a blazer all the time now, though, because I've weirdly learned that audiences, they don't like it if you wear the more dressed up you are, the more the audience dislikes you.
Who does this guy think he is?
That is exactly
Louis C.K. wears a black T-shirt, Andrew.
Exactly. Well, it's because the standard stand-up comedian uniform. When you look, it looks like the stand-up comedian. Just name any of them, minus Paul F. Tompkins, rolled off a beanbag where they were eating Cheetos. I started doing stand-up when I was in Washington, D.C., and I was working on the Hill at the time. And I remember I walked onto stage one time. I'd said nothing, but I just walked onto stage wearing a full suit and tie. And this guy goes, "Oh, fuck this guy." And I was like, "What? Like, you know nothing about me." But I think it's that it's this idea that people in the audience kind of want to use you as a catharsis point. You know, to like, you're the idiot and I'm going to laugh at you, which is fine. Like, that's, you know, that's part of the deal. So it's this bizarre thing where, like, you don't want to overdo it, when you're on stage. I've also found, like, if you ever come see me do stand up, I've just sort of inadvertently gotten contact with my Okie roots when I'm on stage, where I lean into my accent heavier than I do now when I'm talking to people in regular conversation, because it's so different for me to get up and go, "Here are some discrepancies I've noticed." Whereas if I get up and I'm like, "You know, I just don't understand. The buildings are so tall here." Everybody's like, "Oh, poor son of a bitch in the big city. Doesn't know what's going on. We should buy him a drink."
MightyHeaton.com, at MightyHeaton on Twitter. You reach out to Andrew. You tell him you heard him here. Andrew, thanks for hanging out with us. We'll have to do it again sometime.
Yeah. Bring me back on. Thanks for having me.
Take care.
Thanks, Andrew. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Travis, I like Andrew.
Andrew, I'm a big fan. I like talking to him.
Travis, I asked him the wallet question. I think he told us a bunch of stories, but did he actually tell us where his wallet was?
I think it's in his blazer.
It's in his blazer, like one of the extra pockets.
I think one of two things was either leave it in his pants or put it in his blazer pocket instead of pants. I would assume that's where we were going.
I like sharing his videos. They make me seem like I'm a rebel dottie.
He's on a libertarian leaning website and he leans libertarian, but if you watch those videos, nothing in it is preaching libertarianism. Like, it's just like factual common sense, but like super funny.
It was
like,
funny. Me and you were talking before the show, and I think that we were trying to say that we're not libertarians, but then we were like, "Oh, well, who'd you vote for in the last election?" And I'm like, "Oh, Gary Johnson, I think." "What about the election before that?" "I think that was Gary Johnson too." God, I wasn't
want to be president. "Oh, Ron Paul." Oh, it's like, doesn't really get much more libertarian.
Three elections ago, I voted for Obama, right?
Yeah.
But then I didn't the second time.
I think I voted for Bush Jr. once, I think the first one. And then the second time.
Travis, do me and you have the exact same voting history?
Okay, let me break it down. I voted for Bush Jr. Then I voted for Gore. Then I voted for.
Oh, I think Bush Jr. was Gore the first time. So I voted for Bush Jr. over Gore. I wish I could go back. I'd have voted for Gore.
The second time.
I did not vote for Bush Jr. The second time I voted for whoever he was going against. Who was that?
Wasn't it Gore? I thought Gore was number two.
No, no. Oh, it was John Kerry.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I voted for John Kerry.
I don't think I voted for John Kerry. I might have voted. I might not have voted that year.
And then I voted for Obama the first time.
Yep. He got me with Hope and Change that first year.
Hope and Change, Travis. It was seductive, that Hope and Change.
I was suckered in by that, Mr. Rolling Stone. Like, he got me.
Second time, though, I was like, no.
Nah, this no. isn't going to work.
And then, Gary Johnson and Gary Johnson.
Yep,
so we're pretty close, Travis, me and you.
Yeah, we're damn close.
Travis, like, we should do a podcast together.
Yeah. Yeah, makes sense.
We're in a tribe.
Two peas in a podcast.
But that's right? Funny because, you know, it's like, I don't feel it necessary to choose a side. I don't feel it necessary to claim myself as a libertarian or anything. No, I
find myself equally angry, you know, and I try not to. I try to just scroll past all of it, but I find myself equally angry at, like, liberals and conservatives, like, on a pretty much one-for-one basis, and the most part. Like, I mean, and I'm not talking about liberal-conservative. I'm not talking about, like, hardcore anti-Trump and hardcore pro-Trump, because those are different kinds of people. I'm just, like, I just find myself, like, irritated with both sides.
Right, yeah, I hate amounts. Both extremes. And, you know, that's kind of, like, been my gripe with organized religion the whole time, too. It's like, what if they say something that just sounds stupid? Do you just have to believe it anyway?
You just got to buy into it. At least you don't have to believe it necessarily. You just can't open your mouth to say how stupid
You know, Jesus said that you can't be with a gay guy or something. And so everybody, like, doesn't like the gays and stuff. But, like, what if I just think the gays are fine? Leave them alone.
God made that guy kill his kids. God made that guy.
Yeah, that's weird. Don't kill your kids.
Yeah, God made that guy let the whole village rape his daughter to prove his allegiance to him.
But, well, I mean, like,
that doesn't make any sense.
You can borrow things from everybody. You can hear ideas, and you can make your own decisions and make your own Mr. Potato Head however you want. You know, you might not have the mustache. You might just have, like, a silly arm for a nose. But
right.
It's just the way the Mr. Potato Head goes. That's what makes you.
And maybe you have the same arm for a nose that the next guy, but maybe your ear is a hat, and his ear is an ear. I mean, everybody's different, and you don't have to put on the colors. We're not Rambo going into war.
Travis,
you don't
have
to put on that face paint.
I feel as the years go on, and as I learn new things and I have new experiences, I'm becoming harder and harder to clone, because I'm more complex. There's things going on, and I don't think that I want to be in any boxes. I want to go out and do things I haven't done, and I want to learn things I don't already know. And I want to, like, take all things into goddamn consideration, you know, like I listen to that Ben Shapiro guy.
Yeah, of course.
I listen to him all the time, and I don't think I agree with most of what he says, but I just feel like I need something in my head from somebody I don't necessarily agree with. You know, it's
so
like
you're not just blocking everything you don't agree with and living in your special little bubble.
Right. So, like, I listen to him and I don't think I agree with most of his things. Like, he's real, real close minded to, like, like, sex and stuff. And like, it's kind of funny to listen to him talk about sex because he's real squeamish about it.
Really? And he's very, like, missionary position, like Mormony.
But I feel like it's important. I feel like hearing things that you might not agree with helps, because, like, if you get stuck in like just hearing the things that you want to hear, then it's boring.
You never grow if you're just hearing the things you want to hear.
Charles, I was intimidated talking to Andrew Heaton, because Andrew Heaton is a smart guy.
Smart guy. We should actually, we should get a hold of him and see what kind of literature he's reading. What is he listening to? What is he watching? What's going on?
I'm not saying that all our other guests that we've had have been dumb, but like we could talk to them about dumb things.
Yeah, we had that cigarette smoking secession guy on here. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that guy sucked. I didn't like that guy, Travis.
You know what's super funny? I brought him up organically, like it just came out of my mouth, but I just watched on Netflix I Am Not Your Guru. It's a Tony Robbins a documentary about Tony Robbins.
I enjoyed that. I watched that.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah, but it was directed by the same guy that did Metallica's Some Kind of Monster.
Didn't like that very much.
No, me neither. I don't like Metallica really. But we're watching this, and like for the first 15 minutes, Tony Robbins is just dropping that F-bomb, much like Rocky, the smoking cessation guy, but just like F-bomb, F-bomb, F-bomb. And my wife is like, God, like what a filthy mouth this guy's got on him. That's a side of Tony Robbins you've never heard before. He's just kind of like he's almost like Joel Osteen.
It's effective language, Travis.
And that's the thing, like he explains why he does it. It's to jar you, it's to like stop you from whatever you're thinking and to pay attention to the moment or whatever. And I feel like our smoking cessation guy must have like took the Tony Robbins like his training or something to try to do his own self-help kind of gig. But yeah, it was jarring to hear Tony Robbins like shouting fuck at people like left and right. But I agree with you, it was a really good documentary. I teared up a handful of times. I thought it was very effective, and it made me want to be a better person, but not want to spend $5,000 for 6 days of Tony Robbins preaching.
Yeah, we need like a poor man's local Tony Robbins.
Like, yeah, can we get like a $500
for a guy you can go see in a VFW hall for like $20?
Right. 6 days even.
A guy you don't have to commit 3 weeks on an island to.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily want to do any pre-work. It looked like everybody had workbooks and shit. Like, I don't necessarily want to do that. I don't want to like call an ex-boyfriend or well, an ex-girlfriend or whatever you want to do. I don't want to break up with anybody or tell my mom I love her in front of 20,000 people. Just give me a helping hand. You know?
We need drunk to give us motivation. We're gonna just like stockpile drunk with like 20 Tony Robbins books.
Just let him study up.
Let him study up, and then just copy it all, and then just like bring it to us weekly, and it'll make us better people.
And I think, you know, it's amazing too, is looking at Tony Robbins and even looking at that documentary. It's like, and that's all it is. It's like studying people. It's like studying talking points, identifying who people are, and just like regurgitating some shit to make them feel affected. You know, like Tony Robbins had shit like keyed up and ready to rock. Like he asked a question, you know, and got an answer.
Where he's
like,
going.
What was the real thing?
You know, I left work the other day, Travis, and my car wouldn't start. And I was on hold with my insurance company for like 15 minutes because I have that roadside assistance. And after the 15 minutes, my insurance company informed me that they just reimburse me and that I got to find my own tow truck. And I was like, oh, well, this is shitty roadside assistance. I need to remember to get rid of you. You know, I'd never.
Yeah, you're not assisting me do shit.
I didn't. And I was on hold with them too long. I was like, yeah, I need a different car insurance. And so I called my friend and I asked him if he knows anybody who, you know, drives a tow truck, because, you know, he's like a worldly fella who gets out there and, you know, has experiences. And I figured, you know, he might know somebody that I call. Yeah, I could call. See, because Travis, if I Google tow truck, I'm just going to find the guy who's best at the Googles.
Right. You any know, asshole can pop up.
You call somebody that you know and trust, and you ask if they know and trust somebody, right? That's what you do.
Absolutely.
And he said, well, I mean, you know, I don't like, I know tow truck guys, but I don't like have a friend that'll come tow your car for free. I said, I'm not asking for a free tow.
I'm not looking for a goddamn tow.
I'm asking for a goddamn recommendation because you're a worldly fella. And it bothered me when I got off the phone. I was like, does he think that I'm a guy looking for free tows? I'm not looking.
No, you're
for
just
free
trying
toes.
To use, like, reach out and like do like an Angie's List thing. Like, who's it a takes fucking a, tow truck?
It
use?
Takes a village, Travis. You find exactly. A guy you trust. You call him and you ask him if he knows somebody that he trusts that does the thing that you want done. But then I open my hood, and I futzed with my stuff, and my car started. So,
hey, way to go.
It worked out.
Good for you.
Yeah. And, you know, if they came to me and asked me about Saturn's dependability, I would say that my Saturn has done me well, but the little thing on my battery was loose. And so
you still own a Saturn?
Still own that Saturn, Travis.
Good for you. That's you know, I've heard that about Saturns. They haven't made them in what, like 5, 6, 7 years?
Yeah, my
but,
car.
But I still see a lot of them on the road.
You know, I still think that it's a pretty okay looking car. Like when sometimes, you know, you're walking out to get in your car, you know, you're leaving Target, you're walking to your car and you see it and you say, you know, that's a pretty good looking car still. And I'm happy with my car purchase. You know, I feel like I've got some good life out of it, Travis. You know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying.
But I do want to get rid of my insurance provider because they're awful.
Go ahead and call them out.
It was a State Auto.
Ugh. Get rid of them.
Yeah, not into it, Travis. So,
Kim Possible looking thing.
Kim Possible?
Is it just like Esurance? Wasn't it like Esurance Amy or some shit like that? Wasn't she like, she looked like Kim Possible selling insurance?
Oh, yeah, it was Esurance. What happened to Esurance?
They got absorbed, I think, by Geico, maybe.
Oh, that's
the fucking lizard's taking over the world.
Yeah. Travis, do you want to influence anyone on social media? Do you want to give any shout outs to any of your favorite tweeters or anything?
Oh, man.
The Albino Alligators Indie Podcast Top 10 was a big hit, Travis.
It was a big hit, and I think, you know, I've been putting together the list for the next AIPX. I think that's going to come probably end of this month. Probably got a few episodes before we announce
people really want to be on lists, Travis.
They do. And you can find me on Twitter. DM me if you have anything you want to bribe me with. I can be bought. At Produce Travis. DM me with your highest bids. You know, it's like a silent auction. You don't have to do it in public. You know what I'm into if you listen to this show. You know, I like comics. I like horror movies. I like cash. I'm a big fan of cash. The end of this month, we'll have another Albino Alligators indie top 10 podcast list.
Travis, have you considered changing that Twitter handle? Because, you know, you're Produce Travis because you were making fun of Produce J.
Yeah,
but Produce J isn't a thing anymore. And now you're just Produce Travis.
You know, I have considered it, but only for like a fleeting moment, because I've kind of embraced it. I've been this guy for a long time. But, you know, nothing irritates me more than somebody who's constantly changing their handles. Or if you tweet at somebody.
Well, I'd say you had a pretty good run.
Yeah, but you look back at a tweet that you tweeted at somebody, and then you see that it's no longer a Twitter handle. It's just like a bunch of words because that's not their Twitter handle anymore. I'm not into that. I don't want to do that.
Drunkard STL on the Twitters checking in. Hi, Drunk.
So if anybody in the St. Louis area is looking for a hardworking employee with career-minded goals, please contact the show. Leave us a voicemail.
636-487-HAND if you're interested in hiring the Drunkard.
We'll get right to you, man.
Drunky bummed out, buddy?
I ain't gonna lie to you, dude. I'm nary at the end of my rope with the current. The current gig.
Drunk, we're switching to Tuesdays. That'll help, right?
That'll
we're doing it for you, and Travis is going to get some 35 cent wings.
25 cent, baby.
Oh my God, they're 25 cents?
Yep, four for a buck.
It'll help when I get Tweedledee and Tweedledum out of here, too, but.
Drunk.
Corporate process.
We're going to clone you, Drunk. And
you're clone me.
Clone
probably
Drunk.
Good idea. I'm a hardworking guy, man.
Clone
in 30
Drunk.
30 years, we'll have another Drunk.
Yeah. Clone Drunk.
Oh, it's not like one of those automatic right away things, like multiplicity or whatever?
No, Drunk. No, Drunk. It comes out as a baby, so it's not even really you. It's just somebody who's kind of like you.
Yeah. We'll have to try to replicate your entire life experience to get somebody that's somewhat like you are currently.
Drunk, you'll have to teach clone drunk.
That can't happen because they make you wear helmets and shoulder pads on the big wheel nowadays, and you know, you just can't bring back the 80s. So.
Fuck that, baby. I ride my big wheel backwards, and I pretend it's one of those Thundercats vehicles that the bad guys used to use.
It's so clone drunk, and what you can do, drunk, is this time you can teach clone drunk like all the things that you wish you had learned right. Like you could teach your clone to play an instrument, so then when it gets to be an adult, it'll be like the cool version of you.
Once you got it to be that point, would you just like shoot yourself in the head then? Like,
Travis,
like,
am I just describing having a child?
Yes.
It's just having a child, right?
You definitely are. Yep.
Yeah. Just got to make sure it's not a girl.
I think I like them coming out as the adult version better. That's a lot easier.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. They like crawl out of like a vat of goo. They're covered in like gel and they look exactly like you. They have all your memories. That's what I'm totally into. Again,
like Eraser.
Harkening back to Professor Miles Warren, who cloned Peter Parker and also Gwen Stacy just to fuck with Spider-Man.
Your luggage. Drunk, do you have a pick of the week? Something you want the people to know about?
What's today?
Today is March 5th.
My birthday is Wednesday, so we're going to go out on the town on Wednesday night.
Are you going to go see the Black Panther?
Jurassic World was coming out, though.
So your pick of the week is a night out?
A night out with the lady on a Wednesday for her birthday.
Travis, pick of the week.
Travis's pick of the week is Demons. Dario Argento produced horror motion picture from 1986, now currently available to stream on Shudder. Also, its sequel, Demons 2, is available to stream on Shudder. Very 80s, great soundtrack, amazing 1980s practical gore effects. Watch Demons. If you don't have Shudder, go ahead and get it. You can use a promo code from another podcast, Movie Crypt, to get 30 days free. Or you can just use the 7 days free that they give anybody. Watch a bunch of shit on Shudder. I love Shudder. Get Shudder. Watch
Travis,
Shudder.
We need to get Demons. We need to get a promo code.
Can I take my back? Can I take my back? Can I take my back?
You have another pick of the week, Drunk?
Yeah. Tomorrow, History Channel. Season finale, Curse of Oak Island. They actually find something. Tune in.
What?
The Curse of Oak Island. Season finale tomorrow.
Are they searching for Bigfoot or Loch Ness or something?
What is that?
No, they're searching for buried treasure.
Oh, treasure. Fantastic. Curse of Oak Island. Watch that on... what network is that on, pal?
That'd be the History Channel.
History Channel. Or the History Channel app, I would assume, if you have cut the cord I have.
That is
Travis, I have a pick of the week this week.
What's your pick of the week, Mike?
Mike's pick of the week. This is a weird one, Travis, but have you had the little potato company, the little potatoes that you get, and you can make them in the microwave, and then they have a little seasoning packet?
I've not heard of these
things. Little, like, quarter-sized potatoes, Travis. They have them at most grocers, I believe. You make them in the microwave, and usually after we make them in the microwave, it doesn't say to do this, but what we do
is... Are they
is,
just like potatoes, like baked potatoes?
They're little bitty potatoes, Travis!
You know you can just make regular potatoes in the microwave.
No, Travis, these are little bitty potatoes.
Just get baby reds.
They come in a little tray, and you put them in the microwave for 5 minutes, and then we take them out of the microwave, and we put them in a skillet. And we put their little seasoning packet in there as like garlic herb potatoes. They're delicious, Travis. A little potato.
Seems like
company.
A lot of fucking around. Why didn't you just put a potato in the skillet right away?
Travis, it's a whole little thing of potatoes.
The baby potatoes are delicious, though. I'm on Mike's side with this. I'm on Mike's side.
Just buy a bag of baby potatoes. And
Travis, these little bitty potatoes. They're like the size of a quarter.
Oh. That little.
They're little bitty potatoes, Travis. They're little bitty potatoes. They're like the size of a cherry.
So they're not simply potatoes. They're something else.
They're little potatoes.
Huh. Think of a grape tomato.
Grape potato.
Trevor, they have them at grocers. They come in a little packet. You microwave them for 5 minutes, then you throw them in the skillet with a little bit of butter, and you throw the little seasoning packet on them. They're fucking delicious, Travis. It's a healthy little side. I don't know. Are potatoes healthy? They're healthy, right?
No, starches.
Would you say that they are to die for?
No, I mean, I'm not dying for any goddamn potatoes drunk, but they're good. I like them. They're good.
I don't know. I've had some potatoes I might die for.
Guys, we'll be back next week on Monday. We have another guest scheduled. We're excited about it. Drunk, you're not going to want to miss that one, buddy.
Yeah, thanks this week
I'm going to try my best.
This week to Andrew Heaton, MightyHeaton.com.
At Mighty Heaton on Twitter. Good guy. Travis, I never wanted to have guests on more than once. But I like Andrew Heaton. And I like a lot of people. We're just going to have everybody back.
Yeah, everybody come back. Come back on. Tell Andrew you heard him on the old WFOD.
Guns out, thumbs out.
There it is.
Thank you for listening to this installment of the Wheelbarrow Full of Dicks Internet Radio Program. Be sure to join us next Monday night, 9, 8 Central, on Strangelabel.com. And be sure to check out all the other great shows that station offers while you're there. You can download past episodes of our lengthy catalog or enjoy other premium content on our website, found at WFODicks.com. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at WFODix. Email us, mike@WFODix.com or travis@WFODix.com. Let us know what you think. Let us know if you have questions or anything like that. Feedback. Feedback is great. We'd love to hear what you have to say. You can give us a call also, either while we're live or leave a message after hours at 636-487-HAND. Special thanks, as always, to our Patreon sponsors, Liquid Lozenge, Harry Balls Anya, and Brian Kranz. If you'd like to contribute yourself, it's patreon.com/WFODix. Helps us afford hosting and phone number. Microphone holding apparatuses and what have you. We really do appreciate all of you checking it out. Thanks. From the bottom of our cold, dead hearts, thank you. And see you next week.
Lots of good stuff happening. It's going to be juicy. You'll see. All right. Bye for now. Take good care of yourself. Bye.
So, Rocky, thecigarettewhisperer.com, do you have like a social media thing people can get a hold of you on that? Or
got my phone number on it.
Your phone number's on the website. Give Rocky a call. Rocky, thanks for hanging out with us for a few minutes.
Hey, guys. It was a blast. You guys have a good evening.
You too.
Thanks, Rocky. Appreciate it.
Later.
Travis, in the chat, they pointed out that Rocky was very liberal with the F word.
Good for him.
And I saw that.
He was excited that he was listening to some of the shows today on the network and said, I needed to know how liberal I could be with my language. And,
I saw that on that Anthony Robbins thing. He said he uses the F word to get people back in the moment. You know, like if they drift.
To shock you?
Fuck out there. And you're like, whoa! Anthony Robbins just said, fuck! And
that only
back.
Works if you're,
it's
that
tactic,
only works if
Travis.
If you're in like a seminar or like a corporate training when people typically don't use F bombs or say shit, then it absolutely works. But when we're liberally throwing around curses, it doesn't work so much.
Well, no, it's not an attention grab. It makes you feel more like the person's more honest, like they're being real with you. They're
He's
not
being
censoring
real with you. He's not fucking around.
Yeah, he's not censoring
he's
himself.
He's a cigarette whisperer.
Dude's not trying to peddle nothing. He's trying to be there for you.